Siegfried's Hornkull. In Siegfried, the third installment of Wagner's epic tetralogy, The Ring of the Nibelung, we finally meet the character who inspired it. The genesis of Wagner's hero Siegfried can be traced back to the German Nibelunglied and various Norse sagas. In these sagas, Siegfried is called Sigurd or Siegfried, and his story is very similar to that of his operatic doppelganger. Following the death of his semi-divine parents, Sigurd or Siegfried is raised by a foster father. Driven by boredom and frustration, the young hero seeks adventure, and in the course of his travels, he obtains mystic knowledge. Hello, I'm Colin Ewer. Lyric's commentaries are made possible through the generous support of the Patrick G. and Shirley Welsh Ryan Foundation, in memory of their parents. The music that you'll hear in this commentary is generously furnished by Warner Classics and is available for purchase on iTunes. Wagner's epic Ring Journey began in 1848 when he started work on a prose text called Siegfried's Death. He soon realised that if the story and character relationships were to be fully understood, a prequel explaining Siegfried's youth was required. It then became apparent that an additional work about Brünnhilde, Siegfried's lover, her relationship with her father Wotan, and Wotan's desperate efforts to win back the ring and break its curse was also necessary. Still not content, Wagner wrote a shorter introductory work explaining the theft of the Rheingold, the forging of the ring, and the traumas of Alberich, Wotan, and the gods. So what had begun as a single work grew into four. Das Rheingold, the Rheingold, Die Walküre, the Valkyrie, Siegfried, and Götterdämmerung, the Twilight of the Gods. The Ring consumed Wagner for a quarter of a century, and with its first complete cycle of performances at Wagner's Theatre in Bayreuth in 1876, one of the most engrossing and relevant masterpieces of Western art was born. Wagner intended that Siegfried should provide a contrast to Die Walküre and Götterdämmerung, the intense, searing dramas which framed it. Hoping that Siegfried would become the most popular opera in the ring, Wagner wrote in 1851 that Siegfried should be light-hearted, engaging, and warm in character. Siegfried is the first of the ring operas that takes place entirely in the world of nature and humans. Following Siegmund's death, Sieglinde, his twin sister and bride, gives birth to their son Siegfried in the forest. Before her untimely death, Sieglinde entrusts Siegfried and the broken shards of Siegmund's sword Notung to the Nibelung dwarf Mime. With insidious advice from Mime, who wants the ring for himself, Siegfried forges Notung and uses it to kill Mime and Fafner the dragon, who is guarding the ring and the Nibelung treasure. Siegfried then encounters a mysterious character called the Wanderer, who is actually Wotan in disguise. And following their encounter, Siegfried shatters the Wanderer's spear, the symbol of his power. Free at last, Siegfried penetrates the magic flame surrounding Brunhilde's rock, gives her the ring as a token of his love, and claims her as his bride. Siegfried, Wagner's man of the future, is a problematic character. He's not the noble hero of romantic literature. Siegfried is ignorant, petulant, boorish, cruel, and childish. The opera critic Ernest Newman referred to him as an overgrown boy scout, while the German philosopher Theodor Adorno called him a bully boy incorrigible in his naivety. Siegfried is also the progeny of adultery and incest. There's no evidence of incest in the mythology which Wagner adapted for the opera. This was entirely Wagner's invention, which he used to fight against social convention, criticise traditional marriage, and attack sexual taboos within the family. The German philosopher Nietzsche commented astutely that Siegfried's genesis is a declaration of war against morality. But our petulant Boy Scout hero is not all bad. Wagner imbued him with some redeeming qualities. Siegfried has a longing and capacity for love. He's a child of nature, at home in the forest that feels neither threatening nor terrifying to him. Lonely and isolated, he searches the forest for companionship, befriending the animals, like the bear he torments Mima with in the opening scene of the opera. And it's in the forest where he meets the woodbird, who warns him of Mima's treachery and tells him about Brunhilde. Unlike many of the characters who hanker after the ring, Siegfried cares nothing for greed and power. Having killed Fafnir and following the woodbird's advice, all that Siegfried takes from Fafnir's cave is the ring and the magic helmet called the Tarnhelm. So is Siegfried little more than a cipher? Unlike Mime, the Wanderer, Brunhilde, Fafnir and the woodbird, he lacks knowledge. His actions are entirely dependent on the other characters, some of whom use him to further their own ends. Slowly, Siegfried begins to assemble the puzzle of his life. Mime tells him that before his mother died, she named him Siegfried, while the Wanderer tells him about Siegmund and his tragic fate. Siegfried shows no interest in the Wanderer or the knowledge he wishes to impart. No wonder that the Wanderer is horrified that the future he has hoped and planned for is dependent upon the actions of his ignorant, gauche grandson. One of Siegfried's attributes is his fearlessness. His lack of fear is not only fundamental to his character, but also an important theme of the work. Had Siegfried understood fear, he would have been unable to forge Notung and kill Fafnir, nor would he have been able to penetrate the flame surrounding Brunhilde's rock. And if, momentarily, having removed Brunhilde's armour and seeing a woman for the first time, he confuses fear with sexual arousal, our dim-witted hero quickly dismisses it. Siegfried is a perplexing character. His ignorance and naivety, endearing qualities in many, are overshadowed by his lack of interest, concern and cruelty towards others. Unlike Wagner's Parsifal, the pure fool who ultimately attains enlightenment, Siegfried never does. As Wotan learnt in Die Walküre, only an independent being has the power to win the ring and free it from its curse. Siegmund was too much under Wotan's control to qualify. Wotan, disguised as the Wanderer, hopes that Siegfried will be the saviour of the gods. But Siegfried proves to have too free a spirit, and in Act 3 of the opera, when he shatters the Wanderer's spear in his passionate quest for love, he destroys both Wotan's power and the world order that allows love to survive. The tragic relationship between Siegmund and Sieglinde and the doomed relationship between Siegfried and Brunhilde shows that love does not provide a viable alternative to law and structure. The orchestra Wagner wrote for as a young composer was ostensibly the post-classical orchestra of Beethoven, Schubert and Schumann. Its limitations impeded Wagner's musical creativity, as did the basic quality of the instruments. Wagner's early operas were influenced by pre-existing styles: German Romantic, Italian Bel Canto and French Grand Opera. However, as the 19th century progressed and instrument making and performance technique evolved and improved, Wagner began to find his own musical style. By the time he was composing The Ring, he had abandoned the convention of opera as a series of individual arias, ensembles and choruses, preferring a musical structure that was through composed from beginning to end. With music and dramaturgy balanced equally, Wagner had created a new operatic style called music drama. Wagner made important improvements to the orchestra, as well as greatly increasing its size. To create specific effects and orchestral colours, he wrote imaginatively for the woodwind instruments, as well as commissioning new instruments like the Wagner tuba, a cross between a French horn and a trombone. The clarity of the text is essential in the Ring cycle. Characters rarely sing in ensemble, but if they do, they usually represent a single unit. And to prevent the voices being drowned out by the large orchestral forces, the orchestral music frequently duplicates the vocal lines. The most important and innovative element in the Ring cycle is Wagner's use of leitmotif, a short recurring musical theme associated with a character, an object, an idea, or an emotion, heard whenever that character, object, idea, or emotion is referred to. Wagner's leitmotifs, or melodic moments of feeling as he called them, provide an emotional guide and foundation throughout the Ring cycle. This mosaic of motives form an immensely complicated musical structure in which motives are linked thematically and musically, and core motives are adapted, inverted, and combined with others as the narrative or the thoughts and actions of the characters demand. Siegfried consists of a series of scenes between pairs of characters. This dramatic style was inspired by Hellenic theatre from ancient Greece, one of the major influences in the Ring's dramaturgy and structure. The prelude to Siegfried depicts the Nibelung dwarf Mime, Wagner using leitmotifs associated with him to portray Mime's thoughts and actions. Mime and Siegfried's personalities could not be more different. Their relationship is defined by lies. Each tells the other the opposite of what he thinks and means. Siegfried's music is carefree and boisterous. Here he is in full flight, rejoicing that one day he will leave Mime forever. This animated leitmotif becomes associated with Siegfried in the opera. Mime's music is sycophantic and whining. In this excerpt, Mime sings about the trouble and care he took raising Siegfried from childhood. Every word he sings is sugar-coated with deception.
Als sollendes Kind zog ich dich auf, wärmte mit Kleiden den kleinen Wurm, Speise und Trank trug ich dir zu, hütete dich wie die eigene Haut.
The mood changes for the scene between Mime and the Wanderer, where they engage in a game of riddles. Wotan, the active lawmaker, has been transformed into the Wanderer, who is a passive observer. The Wanderer's leitmotif, a descending phrase played by the brass, is magical and majestic, and is unlike any music associated with Wotan that we've heard in the Ring up until now. Here it is, accompanying the Wanderer's greeting to Mime, at the beginning of their scene. The role of Siegfried is one of the most taxing and vocally demanding in the repertory. Siegfried's first test is the closing scene of Act 1. Frustrated by Mime's unproductive efforts at forging a sword for him, Siegfried welds together the shattered fragments of his father's sword, Notung. The orchestral prelude to Act 2 depicts the giant Fafnir transformed into an unhappy, overweight dragon. An example of Wagnerian humour, maybe. The sound world of Act 2 consists of shifting musical moods, characterising each of the various encounters. Leitmotifs portraying Alberich's revenge, his quest to reclaim the Ring, and his ambition to become master of the world dominates his scene with the Wanderer. The music for the confrontation between Siegfried and Fafner depicts Fafner's sadness and Siegfried's heartlessness. And Wagner's original intention for the opera to provide a light-hearted contrast within the Ring cycle is reflected in the scene where Mime and Alberich squabble over the Nibelung treasure. Having killed Fafner, Siegfried literally tastes the dragon's magic blood, allowing him to understand the meaning and hidden truth of Mime's treacherous words. Outraged by his treachery, Siegfried kills him. In the distance, Alberich can be heard cackling triumphantly to the rhythm of the Nibelung motif. At the heart of Act Two is the only scene in the opera where we see Siegfried alone and in contemplative mood, reflecting on his past and the world around him. This scene, referred to as the Forest Murmurs, is a wonderful depiction of nature. Siegfried symbolizes the restored harmony between mankind and nature that was savagely destroyed when Wotan tore a branch from the world ash tree to make his spear, and by Alberich's theft of the Rheingold. Having killed Fafner and tasted his blood, Siegfried understands the language of the forest birds. The woodbird is the only character in the opera that Siegfried actually listens to. She tells him of Mime's treachery and guides him to Brunhilde's rock at the end of Act Two. Disillusioned by the enormity of his task and the possibility that the ring would never be performed, Wagner stopped work on Siegfried after Act Two. Over the next 12 years, he composed two of his greatest music dramas, Tristan and Isolde and The Mastersingers of Nuremberg. Refreshed and inspired, Wagner returned to Siegfried in 1869, completing the opera 2 years later. His wife Cosima writing in her diary, "Richard completes the score of Siegfried today. I am beside him as he writes the last notes." Wagner's orchestral and vocal writing developed and matured during the 12-year gap, and this is evident not only in Act Three of Siegfried, but also in Götterdämmerung. The prelude to Act Three contains music associated with Wotan and Erda, the omniscient earth goddess, who is also Brunhilde's mother. Erda's slow-moving leitmotif has now acquired a sense of urgency as events are moving towards a momentous conclusion. In their scene together, it's clear that Erda's power is waning and that Wotan is resigned to the fact that the twilight of the gods is approaching. Wagner sustains the musical tension throughout Siegfried and the Wanderer's angry encounter, releasing it in the magnificent orchestral interlude to the final scene. In this interlude, Wagner weaves together the leitmotifs associated with Brunhilde and the magic fire music, punctuated by Siegfried's heroic horn calls. Like Siegfried, Brunhilde has a great capacity for love. As a Valkyrie, she loved and honoured Wotan. Familial love developed into compassionate love as she witnessed Siegmund's love for Sieglinde. At the end of Die Walküre, she convinces Wotan that only the noblest form of mankind, a hero, should be able to claim her. The final scene begins as Siegfried wakens Brünnhilde. Their duet begins tentatively as they struggle to comprehend their emotions. Brünnhilde is troubled by harrowing memories from her past, while Siegfried reminisces about his mother. Unable to comprehend the meaning of Brünnhilde's history, Siegfried experiences fear for the first time. While Brünnhilde, realizing that she is now mortal and alarmed by Siegfried's growing passion, is overcome with shame and terror. In music illustrating her loyalty and devotion, Brünnhilde tells Siegfried that she has always loved him. Wagner adapted this music from one of his earlier works, his Siegfried Idyll, written for his wife Cosima to celebrate the birth of their son Siegfried in 1869. Brünnhilde, realizing that she is experiencing yet another form of love, erotic love, finally surrenders to Siegfried's ardent protestations. The opera ends in a glow of engaging, light-hearted warmth, just as Wagner had written that it should 25 years earlier. David Poutney's production reclaims the ring for the theatre. Set in the skeletal structure of an old theatre and using an array of traditional theatrical devices, we see the means by which effects are created as well as the effects themselves. David Poutney's production of Siegfried is seen through the eyes of an innocent child, Siegfried himself. Johan Engel's sets, realized by Robert Innes Hopkins, create a larger-than-life world for the characters to inhabit. The first act takes place in a child's nursery, while the world of nature in Act Two is seen as if imagined by a child. And finally, as Siegfried moves towards maturity in Act Three, we return to the adult visual worlds of Das Rheingold and Die Walküre. From the vividly characterized domestic world of Act One, with the thrilling heroics of the forging song, through the gloriously rich natural world of Act Two, culminating in the orchestral and vocal Everest of Act Three, Wagner created a very distinct musical world for each of Siegfried's three acts. Wagner would have gained musical immortality had he composed nothing other than Act Three of Siegfried, with its orchestral magnificence, its richly drawn characters, and its burning passion. So let's leave Siegfried and Brünnhilde about to consummate their passion, or as Anna Russell humorously referred to it, their love on the rocks. For Siegfried and Brünnhilde, all is love and laughter. At least for now.